Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Beautiful city of York at the moment. UK Championship starts today, and the great Jimmy White at 60 years of age has qualified. He's playing tonight against Ryan Day. He's been pulled out of the draw against Ryan Day tonight on the BBC at 7 o'clock.
Wow.
Amazing achievement. He's won four matches to get here, and be commentating on his match tonight. And wonderful achievement, and I'm really looking forward to watching him play tonight.
So he's looking to revive the career at the tender age of 60 years of age. He doesn't look it, I have to say. He's looking well.
Yeah, he's looking well. He won this tournament 30 years ago, Reg, would you believe? 1992, beat John Parrott in the final.
Wow.
And it's the first time he's qualified for the last 32 in 12 years, I think it is now. So, he won four matches down at Sheffield to qualify. Amazing achievement, really. At 60 years of age.
Yeah.
It's quite incredible. I think the last person at that age to be on TV in the last 32 was Eddie Charton, would you believe?
Wow, amazing. So what's the first round match? What's it consist of? Games?
Best of 11.
Starts,
so the top 16 start in this round and 16 qualifiers. So it's best of 11. Xiao Jintong from China, he's the defending champion. He won it last year, but Ronnie O'Sullivan is on a roll at the moment. He won the Hong Kong Masters. He won the Champion of Champions last week, beating Trump in the final. And so he'll probably start out as favourite this week, you know.
Absolutely.
Very interesting. I don't know what you saw last week, Rez, in the final of the Champion of Champions. Judd Trump, Ronnie O'Sullivan. Judd Trump made it 1-4-7 in the final.
Yeah.
And Ronnie O'Sullivan, and it's the first time I've ever seen this. I don't know what you saw, but the first time I've ever seen it, he never got up to congratulate.
It was weird. It was so weird.
It was
weird.
Very strange, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was a lot made of it. And
What did you think of it?
Well, I couldn't believe it. I mean, what's his problems was the first thing that I thought about it is, like, with everything that Ronnie has achieved in his career, and, you know, we've seen situations with him in the past where he, remember that time where he asked how much is the 147 worth, and then they told him nothing, and then he didn't do it. He missed the black on purpose or whatever, you know. He's done strange things, but this made no sense at all. Is there a history between the two of them or anything?
No, I don't know. I mean, he beat Joe Trump in the final of the World Championships only maybe 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And do you remember, there was a big hug at the end of the match. He hugged Trump for about 5 minutes, and it seemed very sort of elongated at the time.
That's right.
A bit weird, like,
yeah,
you know?
That's right.
But this time, I don't know why he didn't get up. Now, you know, in all the years I've been playing, and I've been playing a long time, Rich.
Yeah.
Every time a person has made a 147, even people from the other table, now obviously this is the final, so somebody else gone, but like, your opponent would always get up, congratulate you, you know, shake your hand or hug you, whatever the case may be.
Mm.
But this time, he just sat in his chair, never moved, never got up to shake his hand. And Judd Trump sort of turned around, was sort of expecting him to get up, but he never did, you know.
Didn't arrive on the scene, yeah.
And now, I don't know. I mean, maybe it was sort of a bit of psychology saying, well, I'm not going to get up and shake his hand. I'm going to sort of turn this around and make this attention, make it sort of, not give him any attention at all, and sort of get people talking about not getting up to talk. You know what I mean? I don't know whether it was reverse psychology or not.
Does he think that deeply about it, though? Because with Ronnie, you're kind of always thinking he's just so focused on himself, he wouldn't care. It felt more like, you know, I couldn't care less what you get. I mean, I'm going to beat you anyway. So that side of it wouldn't work me. But it was very strange. As you said, I can't remember who it was. Got a 147, and I always remember the scene of, was it Werbenick or someone? Was it Werbenick looking around the corner, looking around the screen? It was an amazing scene.
Yeah.
So, You know, you're kind of, that's how much, they all stopped on the other tables to let him have total silence for the 147. So it's a huge achievement. Now, I saw you getting one in a charity event that we did one time, and it was amazing to watch it. Like, I mean, that wasn't in competition, but it was just, I was stuck to the table watching your every shot. Yeah, and once you got to the kind of century, you were kind of going, this is on here, you know, and you're going, don't miss it. So it's a very strange one.
Well, it's not often that it happens in competition, first of all.
Mm.
And particularly in finals, you know. So it's a great achievement. You know, it's like a 9 darter, obviously, or a hole in one in golf. You know, it's a great achievement. And anybody who does it, you know, is always congratulated, but he never did. And it's the first time in history, you know, he got everybody talking about it.
Yeah.
Now, whether it be good or bad or whatever, but he got everybody talking about it. And I don't know whether it's reverse psychology or not. I think it is.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether he was just sat there thinking, well, I'm not going to, I'm still involved in the final. And it's just another frame to me, you know what I mean? So.
Nah,
I really don't know, but wouldn't I think it was much reverse psychology, you know?
Yeah, maybe it was. And like, was he asked about it afterwards? Did someone quiz him on it? Or
he says, I don't care what people think. He says, I was still involved in the final. He said, I was more worried about that. I was more concentrating on that. Yeah, 147 to me is nothing, you know?
Mm.
But Joe Trump was very sort of upset about it. Not upset, but
yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, it was kind of like, you couldn't even be bothered shaking my hand for such a big achievement, you know.
Yeah, exactly. He was a bit more annoyed more than anything that O'Sullivan would get up and recognize it, you know. So there's a little bit of controversy there.
Yeah, I suppose it's the etiquette of the game, really, isn't it? It's like if two golfers were playing against each other at the 18th and they didn't shake hands, and walked off, it would be more looked on that way.
Something like that,
anyway, I'm sure he'll get over it and they'll move on. It wouldn't be snooker if Ronnie wasn't causing some sort of controversy.
No, I mean, he's such an enigma, you know, and amazing talent. I mean, he came back from 7-3, Trump to 7-6. And then O'Sullivan came out after the interval and just went bang, bang, bang and won 10-6. He was quite incredible. He's such a genius, O'Sullivan, you know. Yeah. At 46 years of age, still producing the goods. And, you know, he's just an amazing, amazing talent. You know, whether you like him, there's a lot of things he does I don't like.
Yeah.
But when you watch him play,
there's nothing like him.
Not like him at all.
You mightn't get a chance tomorrow, will you, to see the FA Cup final? Big one, Derry City and Shelburne. Huge day for both teams. But Damien Duff, I suppose, he's been, since he's gone into that role, that all eyes have been on him. They've been really wondering about his managerial skills and whether he has it and everything else. But he seems to be getting a lot out of that Shelburne team for a limited, maybe in some ways, squad. So he's saying in all the interviews, he's talking about how he's going to actually find it hard to keep his emotion in check for tomorrow. It means so much to him.
Yeah, it's a big, huge match, isn't it? He's cutting his teeth there and he's doing really well, like, in all fairness, you know, to get to the final, as you said, with limited resources. It's a huge day for them, isn't it? For both teams.
Mm, absolutely.
They're up against a tough side. But he's done really well, you know, and I'm fair play to Damien Duff, you know. I have a lot of respect for him.
Yeah, me too.
And I think he's doing really well, and it's a great start for him to get to the FA Cup final with Shelburne. It's going to be a big day out for them and the supporters.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It'll be a huge turnout for it. The Aviva, busy place this weekend. Last week, did you get to see the game against South Africa at all?
Amazing, wasn't it? I mean, I'm sure you were delighted, but you were a bit wary of the great South Africans as well.
I was worried before the game. I genuinely thought we were in trouble. And I think, like many people, following the game, we didn't know what we were going to get because Ireland hadn't played that many games together and it was a bit nervy. It was nervy for Irish supporters, and I genuinely thought we were going to come off second best to South Africa. I have no problem saying that. I said that last week as well. I knew it was going to be very, very tight, but I just felt that they were going to be that little bit too strong, and certainly the way they started out and the way they came at us, you never knew which way it was going to be. And it was such a tight nip and tuck match, but it was a great game, and Ireland were, it was brilliant the way they proved everybody wrong, and the rugby they played was fantastic.
Brilliant, absolutely fantastic. I mean, when you look at the results, you know, if they beat New Zealand, beat South Africa now, weren't number ones, you know. I mean, it's just, you know, amazing what they've done,
yeah.
you know, over the last couple of years. And, you know, they're going from strength to strength. And hopefully now they can turn that into... Imagine if they won the World Cup now.
Asher, it's in the bag now, Ken. It's done. We have it. The World Cup's ours. There's no, no, nobody can beat us. That's all the chat now.
It's a great expectation, you know?
Yeah, and, no, it is. It is.
It's just fantastic. I mean, obviously, New Zealand and France are going to be very, very difficult. But they have the confidence now. You know, they've shown what they can do. They beat New Zealand, beat South Africa. You know, there's nothing holding them back.
No, there's a real consistency of performance. I'm very wary of it, though, because 2007, there was all that chat as well about this great Irish team that were going to go over to France, and it just didn't happen for them, and these things can happen. We have a very tough draw and group matches within the thing, but that's, look, we're the team to fear now. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely. The other
teams are the ones worried about Ireland, not the other way around. In the past, every World Cup you were going into, it was a case of, oh no, we're in New Zealand's group, or we've got South Africa in that group. It's the group of death, or it's really hard, or that'll be a tough one. Now it's actually the other teams that are going, oh no, we have Ireland and we don't want to be in that group, which is an amazing position to be in. But
Yeah,
we won't get... I won't allow myself to get too excited. We just have to get there first, get in there and keep everybody intact, and hopefully it'll all work. But they're an amazing team. They really are brilliant. And Munster had a great win as well against the South African A side on Thursday night, which they badly needed, because things have been falling apart there a bit at Munster. To finish up with you there, just the United game, it was a little bit hairy there in that cup, but they got there in the end. It came back from 2-1. You must have been thinking, oh no, here we go again.
Yeah, I mean, after losing to Villa in the league, you know, Unai Emery, he's done an amazing job already. You know, they played really well. You know, I think United were very leggy after the Real Sociedad match, without making excuses, but it was a really tough match during the week in the Europa League on the tour, say, and then they lost, of course, to Villa on the Sunday. But they played well. They freshened up the team, made 7 changes, and even though they went 1-0 down, 2-1 down.
Yeah.
They played well, scored some good goals. I think that Garnacho, I don't know whether you watched a bit of him.
I didn't, no.
That Garnacho on the outside left position. Wow, what a talent. I think he's only 18, 19 years of age. Mm. But what a talent he is. I mean, I'm not quite sure we... I think he was picked for Argentina, was he, for the World Cup? I'm not 100%
sure.
But, I mean, what a talent he is. Mm. And if he is, he could really light up the World Cup. He's an amazing, amazing talent. And I hope he stays with United for a long time, because he created one goal. But every time he gets the ball, he's exciting. He runs at the defenders. He's got a lot of skill and a lot of confidence, you know. And it's great. It's great to see, you know.
But, absolutely.
Yeah, it was great for them to get through, and they got Burnley in the next round, which they avoided. Man City and Liverpool have got each other in the next round, which is great for a lot of the other teams.
Yeah.
And United have got Burnley at home. We were doing really well in the Championship, actually, under Vincent Kompany, the leaders in the Championship. So that'll be a tough match at home, but one that you'd fancy United to get through.
But it's rugby now, and it's been another great week of rugby for Ireland, no question about it. And I'm joined on the line now by Will Slattery, as always, to discuss that. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Good, thanks, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Very, very well. I was very worried last week. We'll get to the Ireland game in a second. I was worried. Happily, I was proven wrong, and it was a great performance. But again, during the week... I think it was Thursday night, we were looking at history from Páirc Uíochmhainn as the Munster team took on a South African A selection. And I have to say, given all the doom and gloom there's been around Munster rugby, and we've been chatting about it, what a great performance and what a great result.
Yeah, and a great occasion there. I was actually there in Páirc Uíochmhainn on the terrace as a punter rather than working there, and I really enjoyed it. I think it opens up a huge amount of possibilities, both kind of financially for Munster Rugby, if they can maybe host a couple of games there potentially, just in terms of engaging that Cork fan base that obviously now that they've moved to Limerick pretty much permanently has been kind of cut adrift maybe a small bit. And as you say, it could be a galvanising moment for Munster in their season. Like, they've only won 2 of their first 7 league games. and it was a reasonably inexperienced selection with a mix of some more experienced guys, and they played really well. It wasn't a South African Springbok selection, albeit a lot of those guys have been capped, but it was still a strong URC South African All-Star team, and Munster were worthy comprehensive winners. Antoine Frisch played really well. A few other guys really stood up. Paddy Patterson got man of the match and did that funny interview. You know, his speedy service is kind of Gibson Park-esque in some ways, and that could maybe be something that Munster look at more. So, yeah, it was a really positive night on all fronts.
You know, we're talking about them and the positivity that we've been talking about in the last couple of games. There has been a common theme in that. It's been, as you said, the lesser known, lesser experienced players that seem to be stepping up to the plate. Is there something in this for maybe Graham Rowntree and his coaching staff to look at, that maybe it's time for a changing of the guard?
In some ways, yeah. Like we talked a lot about Conor Murray last week before the game, and I mentioned that I didn't think that his style of play meshes well with the way Irish rugby is going generally. He's been an unbelievable player, but I do think it's time to go with that speedier service, that scrum half on a full-time basis. Like, of the guys who weren't involved, senior players, Tyburn obviously walks back into that team, Peter O'Mahony walks back into that team, but besides that, like, at the moment, the guys who were there look the good guys to be playing. Like, Edwin Odogbo has been a revelation this year. You know, I know Kieran McDonald has only been signed on a short-term contract because of the Watt situation, but he played really well against a meaty South African second-row pairing also. So there's a few guys there who definitely warrant more game time. Jack Crowley, obviously, is probably been one of the big winners of the last few weeks, even though Ben Healy actually had his best game in quite a while, and it was an important game for him against South Africa. But I definitely think Graham Rowntree, and to be fair, he has used a huge number of players this year. He has been looking at various options, some of it by kind of forcing his hand because of the injuries they've had. But I don't think he knows his best team yet because of availability issues and injuries. But I think when he does eventually settle on it, maybe in the latter half of the year, I wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of young players still be featuring pretty prominently, which is a massive sea change to the Van Graan era.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would agree. I think probably Graham Rowntree's just looking at the situation going, the way I can manage my way through this is which he has to do, because it's a rough period, there's no question about it, is by giving people opportunity. And you know yourself, when there's a hunger there and a desire and people who've been sitting there waiting for their chance, they're going to go out and produce, and they're certainly doing that. What did you make of the South African attitude to the game? I mean, it's a big blow to them, and this is not taking anything away from Munster. It's a great performance from Munster, but you have to ask questions about South Africa ahead of a World Cup, where they actually stand. They've been beaten by their senior team on the Saturday, and then their A team, who you would have thought would be going all guns blazing to make an impression to push into the senior squad, get convincingly beaten. So what does it say about South Africa and that squad?
I don't know if I'd read too much into the A portion of it. Like, we saw ourselves, our A team got absolutely trounced, the week before, and, ultimately, while it's disappointing for the players involved in that day, it doesn't mean that they're, bad players. It's a scratch team thrown together. Like, you don't know how much preparation South Africa really had. They're coming together from, four teams at least, and there was a couple of guys thrown in from the English Premiership as well, so they wouldn't have really played much together. And like, I'm really interested to see how the senior team bounce back tonight against France, because they have a very long, like, they still have England to come at Twickenham as well later on in the window. So how I don't know, they've made some changes for the game tonight, but how they bounce back as well will be very interesting. See, I wouldn't be calling panic stations yet. I still think South Africa are in a pretty strong place, to be honest.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, let's go back to last week. South Africa weren't in a strong place, it has to be said. I was very worried. I didn't mind saying it to you here on air about the game pre-match. I just thought that South Africa would be a little bit too strong for us physically, and I was proven wrong, thankfully. It was a wonderful performance from Ireland across the board. Huge, huge performances. And getting the result in the end the way that they did. I suppose the question is now, we're well and truly cemented in that number one spot, and we're the team that people have to fear ahead of the next World Cup. How is that going to sit with us?
Yeah, it's been a question mark before, whether Ireland can deal with the favourites tag, whether they can deal with the pressure of having to perform rather than being underdogs. I think if that's kind of the first check mark, I think it was, a very encouraging performance in that regard. It didn't seem to weigh on them in any way, and a couple of things in particular impressed me. Like, if you even cover the result and just look at how things unfolded over 80 minutes, the Ireland pack you know, managing to deal with that physicality. Yes, in the opening 15, South Africa looked really rampant. Their forward carries were really strong. But Ireland ultimately did hold them out. I know they were kind of hanging on a little bit, but I thought it was really good scramble defence and really good double tackles when it was required. And the maul defence as well was massively impressive. Like, that is a huge weapon for them. And Ireland really nullified it almost entirely and ended up getting a maul try themselves, as we know, through Josh van der Vleer. So that portion of it was massively encouraging. Even from a psychological perspective, I never personally bought into the idea that, like, Leinster or Ireland can't deal with the Saracens or can't deal with La Rochelle. I always thought, if you go back to those performances, there was plenty of other aspects that contributed to it, albeit the forward power was an issue. And then the other thing that really encouraged me from the South Africa victory was when Ireland did get a few chances, that fast tempo game did actually punch holes. Even in the first half, there was only one or two passes away from potentially, you know, cutting them open out wide. There was, you know, once or twice Ireland players had to check to receive the ball when, if it was in stride, an opportunity might have presented itself. So I think it was kind of, again, vindication that this game plan can work against a big physical side. So a couple of check marks there that I thought were very encouraging.
Yeah, it was. It was a wonderful performance. I think it was very sad to see Conor Murray go off injured, no question about that. But there did seem to be a noticeable increase in tempo when Jameson Gibson Park came on, and the ball moved so much quicker away. Has that sort of put, you know, absolute a number on that nine jersey? Has that put a name in there with Jameson Gibson Park? It seems to be he needs to be the starting nine for us to have that very fast tempo game.
Yeah, I think definitely. Like, to be fair, had he come into the game with, you know, having played a match for Leinster, I think he definitely would have started. But, like, Andy Farrell still really backs Conor Murray. You can just tell by the way he selects his side, but also the way he talks about him, how much he values him in the squad and values him as a player as well. So it honestly wouldn't surprise me if Gibson Park went down or if he was carrying a knock to see Murray inserted as a starting scrum half again. I don't think that's the best way for Ireland to succeed. As you mentioned there, I thought Conor Murray was okay. You know, he made that nice break that led to 3 points. You know, his opening kick got, you know, retrieved by Ringrose. That led to another 3 points. But I do agree with you that I thought the team played a lot better when Gibson Park. They looked a lot more themselves. You know, they looked a lot closer to the Ireland team we saw in the summer. So, yeah, for me, Gibson Park is a nailed-on nine. And to be fair to Farrell, you have to give him a lot of credit. He kind of, like, unearthed him in a way. Like, Gibson Park was at Leinster for, you know, 2.5 seasons.
Yeah.
Or could have even been 3.5 seasons, actually. And as the sub-scrum half who kind of came on to insert some tempo, and Farrell actually just kind of decided to elevate him above everybody else into the Ireland team, which wasn't a popular call at the time, but he's been massively vindicated on it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, there's no doubt about it. He's the form nine and has to really start in a lot of people's minds if we're going to be taking on the teams, because while we do match the likes of a South Africa physically, you cannot keep doing that all the way through an 80-minute game. There has to be movement and space created out wide that's to get around these teams. And that's what Ireland did. As you said, they almost unleashed it in the first half, but then they did when they, you know, moved the ball really well in that second half of the try and those types of game plan where they were moving the ball away from that big contact area, because that's where I felt South Africa, even coming into that second half, I thought these guys are unbelievably well in this match, but if we go back to that tight game, we'll probably be in trouble. Whereas when we started to move those big guys around the place, you could see them starting to run out of steam and their heads start to drop a little bit. That's the way you got to play a big physical team.
Yeah, and it, like, the game plan Ireland employ now is massively less physically attritional than the one under Joe Schmidt. Like, it's not as reliant on having to, like, win every kind of collision or carry, you know, one-out runners and kind of beast the other teams in that area. It's about finding space. It's about kind of playing away from the bigger guys. Obviously, there are times the game does get into an arm wrestle, like we saw in the first half last week, where your team has to front up and you have to maybe cut your cloth and be a little more conservative than you would otherwise like to be. But if you think back to that test series, like, I don't think any of us came out of it thinking, God, what a bruising physical encounter. Sure, there were some high tackles that we don't like to see, and there was obviously physicality, but I think we came away from being like, God, Ireland's really sliced them open, which is kind of different to maybe some of the victories in the Schmidt era, where it was more set piece focused, you know, with strike moves and kind of winning the kicking battle and the, you know, the physical battle, and then we couldn't win the physical battle against, you know, bigger teams like England, and we struggled. Whereas this team, I think, is built in a more sustainable way, and I actually think with a lot more growth potential as well. Obviously, the World Cup draw is hard, but from what we've seen so far, you have to be encouraged with the direction they're moving on. I think there is still room for this team to grow and get better, both in terms of individuals improving, but also the collective game plan, which is still not that old. It was only really the latter half of the 2021 Six Nations where it kind of came into bloom. So I still think they'll be kind of maybe peaking at the right time, potentially, in a year.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, look, on to today's game. It's an early kickoff, 1 o'clock against Fiji. I was quite impressed with Fiji, I have to say, in their last game. I thought they brought a fantastic bit of flair to the game, moving the ball around. There's no doubt there's a physicality there. This has been given as a foregone conclusion for Ireland. Of course, I'm not questioning for 1 second that we're going to win this game, but I was a little bit surprised at the margin. The bookies have got them at like minus 27 points. Seems a little bit big, in my opinion, because the Fijians can score and can play a bit of rugby if they get any ball. And also, you've got a little bit of an untested combination in that we're still not sure where Joey Carberry is. They've persisted all the way through the last number of years with Joey Carberry, and now he's starting at 10 today because he is considered to be the absolute second choice 10. But I think in many ways, like Murray last week, I think this is a very decisive game for Carberry. He needs to have a big one.
Yeah, because the way Andy Farrell has selected his team and the way he selected it last autumn as well is basically he appears to is going with almost his full strength team throughout, with a couple of changes for the Fiji game and last year it was the Argentina game last time out, which I think that's where the spread comes from, is because, you know, Ireland went with their strongest side pretty much last year and they obliterated Japan and Argentina when they kind of made even a couple of changes. So he's gone with like a really strong team. So Carberry doesn't really have any excuse not to go out today, I don't think, and play well and look convincing. Because to be fair to him, like when he's come on for Ireland off the bench and seen out games, his kicking has been good. He's kind of moved the team into the right areas. Today from the start, we want to see him running that attack as well as Johnny Sexton does. He's playing Fiji, which wouldn't be as big a challenge. He has, you know, Henshaw, McCluskey, Balakum, Mac Hansen. You know, he has a really strong back line. There's a lot of quality in that pack as well. So Carberry should really be pulling the strings today, and we should be coming out of it thinking, wow, that was a 9 out of 10. He looked really comfortable. He looked really confident. Because as you say, if he doesn't, Jack Crowley is snapping at his heels in the wing. He's probably been, as I mentioned earlier, the big winner from the first part of this season. He's kind of, you know, with Frawley's injury concerns, has a chance to maybe stake a claim to be in that out half conversation behind Johnny Sexton. So I like the way Andy Farrell has picked this team today. He mentioned, you know, during the week, he doesn't want to give out cheap caps. He wants people to really have to earn it. And that A game, in his mind, must have, I'd say, knocked a couple of guys out of contention. But in some ways, it makes people hungrier. It's funny, when you're doing it from a position of strength, when you've won a few games, it sounds a lot better. If Ireland hadn't been doing well, you'd be thinking, God, he's not changing the team. Where are the new faces? But with the success he's had, he's earned that bit of leeway to do things his way. And it worked last autumn. It carried into the Six Nations. It carried into the summer. So I don't have a problem with the way he selected the team today.
Yeah, absolutely not. It's funny, there's a couple of guys in this squad. I saw an interesting article during the week with Jack Conan where he was the man. He was the guy in the position, lines, talk, all that kind of stuff that was going along around his play in that. And all of a sudden, a bit of a niggle, a bit of an injury, and he finds himself out in the cold a little bit again and struggling to get back into the starting lineup in that team. So a big, big day for Jack as well to try and make an impression and stake his claim.
Massively so. Like he, as you mentioned, he had a great line store. He was part of that back row last autumn against New Zealand where it was Conan, Darsam and Fleer, and they looked so dynamic and so aggressive, and you were thinking, God, this is a back row you can take to the World Cup. But as you say, he seems to just pick up these small kind of strange, like he got a cut on his face there earlier in the year that, like, you know, took him out of action, and picks up these kind of knocks. He has had injury trouble in the past, but recently it's kind of been more niggles, as you say. And to be fair to Peter O'Mahony, he came in and he restaked that claim. People were kind of pushing him towards the exit door, saying he's not dynamic enough, that he's not, you know, he doesn't have the kind of the skills or the place in this new Ireland plan, but he's actually proven a lot of people wrong, myself included. I've been really impressed with him. I thought again last week he brings that bit of character, that bit of dog, but he's been very effective. So yeah, it's a really big game for Conan. And as you say, there's a lot of guys around this squad who have kind of maybe picked up an injury or missed a couple of games. And then the guys who've come in have done so well. They're on the outside. Like, Jacob Stockdale is obviously one. Like, James Lowe will come back into the team, you presume, but he's missing out on an autumn where Ireland beat South Africa. And depending on how he comes back into fitness and form, you know, does he get straight back into the team? Ian Henderson is another one. Ty Byrne and James Ryan have really looked cohesive in that second row pairing. Question marks about their size, but they've been playing really well. Does Henderson get back into the team? So, it's Bundyaki, another one. He's suspended. Guys are playing well in the centre. So it's actually, all of a sudden now, you know, you're looking at it and you're thinking, oh, we actually have a suite of options if we can get guys fit at the right time. Yeah. You could really add some power and some ballast to that bench.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a very, very strong Ireland team. Obviously, they're going to take care of Fiji today. It is a strong side. And I think we can sit back and enjoy watching what they can do. I'm certainly looking forward to the game. I'll be going along to that today with my son. And so really looking forward to that one. I thought it was interesting during the week. It raised a few eyebrows. Cian Healy's comments. I suppose it adds to the Andy Farrell positive news story and all the good that he's doing, but I thought there was some very pointed remarks in the interview with Cian Healy, referring back to, without saying it, probably the Joe Schmidt era and how maybe it wasn't the happiest place to be in the world when you were in an Irish camp then.
Yeah, it's funny how much perceptions can change. Like, there was a famous anecdote of, you know, someone dropping a key card in the hotel corridor and Joe Schmidt finding it and reading the riot act in one of his first Ireland camps, being like, we do not do this. This is not how we have our attention to detail. And players were on edge because they needed to know every inch of the playbook or else they wouldn't play or else they'd get a bollocking. Whereas Andy Farrell does seem to have changed the approach. And it, like, you can even see the way Ireland play. It is more untidy. That's a word that is used a lot. There is more kind of scope for, you know, kind of
expressionism.
I don't want to say, because they clearly are, that attacking structure is clearly really well honed and defined, so it's not as if it's all just like off the cuff, but yeah, there's definitely more room for players not to be as buttoned up as they were. And
there has,
like,
to be.
There's no doubt, like Ireland won 3 Six Nations titles in 6 years under Joe Schmidt, but I don't think any player would say that it was like a barrel of laughs, like, yeah, that they were on edge. It's a different camp. It does seem to be a happier camp. I thought it was very interesting. Peter Armani, after last November, said that was the best month or the most enjoyable month I ever had with an Ireland team. Yeah. And at this stage, Ireland they haven't won anything under Andy Farrell. They hadn't gone to New Zealand and won that series. They'd won a Grand Slam under Joe Schmidt, but it didn't have the same kind of, you know, as was fun or kind of experience, as you say, expressions. Like, I want to be careful that you don't kind of, like, in the rearview mirror say, oh, the Schmidt era was this or was that, because at the time we all loved the winning and we loved seeing the team do well, but there's no doubt that the style of play is more easy on the eye now, and the players themselves, as you say, are coming out and kind of saying it, that they prefer this environment, they prefer this setup.
Well,
it's not to say that they haven't taken the lessons of Joe Schmidt, but it does seem that Andy Farrell has put his own stamp on it and it's been very successful.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, Will, when you're heading into camp and everybody is saying, oh, yeah, you should be so happy to be there, obviously, we were always delighted to be there, but when you're heading into camp on a Sunday night to City West with weeks, probably about 2 months ahead of you of knowing that you're going to be living Groundhog Day, in and out, same meals, same people, same routine, with a game at the end of each week, you need to know that it's a place that you're comfortable in and that you're, you know, getting a little bit of enjoyment in. People are there, it's human beings, there's got to be a bit of crack in it as well. But if you're heading in there for 2 months and it's sheer dread at every day being chastised and maybe schoolmasterish in the way that you're being dealt with, it isn't something that you will look forward to. And if you're not looking forward to being in a situation, it doesn't bring the best out of people. So I think Andy Farrell seems to have got that balance right, and that's with the utmost of respect for everything that Joe Schmidt achieved for Irish rugby and dragged us to a place probably that we may never have gotten to if we hadn't experienced that. But I'd say the lads who remember that era and are experiencing this one can certainly realise how lucky they are to be in the position that they're in.
Yeah, a former Ireland international told me that they used to call it Auschmidt. Like, you know, which is obviously a bit of a tasteless joke, but that kind of shows the level of kind of, as you mentioned, school mastery or kind of the on-edgeness or the kind of mentally draining element of being in an extensive Ireland camp was.
Yeah, okay. Well, look, victory for them today. That's our prediction, no question about that. A couple of the other games caught my eye last week. It was fantastic rugby last weekend. I was glued to it for the whole day. I had a wonderful weekend, but I... I have to say, England were probably the... I won't say they were a surprise. I think we both discussed it. I certainly felt Argentina were always in with a big chance in that game. But I was surprised maybe with how poor the England squad were in the way that they played the game or approached the game or what they brought to the game. It was pretty dire to watch, to be honest with you.
I think they're really struggling at the moment. I think Eddie Jones, like his selection policy, I think is really jumbled. He chops and changes. He keeps talking about the World Cup, but in a different way to the way we're obsessed with the World Cup. He's using it, I think, as an excuse for some really poor performances and some really poor results. They won 2 out of 5, 2 consecutive Six Nations. And like, this is a huge game for them today. They picked a very strong team. They have South Africa and New Zealand to come in the next 2 weeks. So if they don't get a win today, or if they don't play well today, like the window could go pear-shaped very quickly. Like, as you say, it didn't come as a massive surprise. Like, Michael Checa has, as we maybe thought, he could go in and he's knocked heads together and he's gotten Argentina playing really, really well. But England, I just think, they have a... Because like, when I look at their team sheet for today, they have so much quality in it, but they're just not getting the best out of it. Like, another defence coach is coming in after this window. Like, the amount of chopping and changing he does in his backroom team as well as on the pitch... This can't have any continuity. When you look at the Irish setup and see Andy Farrell, Easterby, guys like that have been there for, you know, 5-6 years, and then Mike Catt and, you know, Paul O'Connell have been there for a few years now, whereas it just seems like Eddie Jones just can't keep staff around, which, when players are hearing different messages from different coaches every time they come in for a new window, that's not going to build cohesiveness or continuity. So I'm actually really intrigued to see how they go today. Japan ran New Zealand really close a couple of weeks ago. It wouldn't surprise me if Japan went, you know, close today. I would be surprised if they got the win, but even a close run victory for England wouldn't fill them with confidence with the fixture list they have to come.
I think it'll be a boring power-based game that England will play, and I think that will just take Japan. They won't be able to deal with that. Now, if Japan can somehow get some decent ball and use that exciting backline of theirs and, you know, just run the ball and run the game as they did against New Zealand and play that excitement, they could catch England on the hop, but I just think the power game that England will have at set piece, just really talking about the scrum line out and a bit of mauling, that'll just wear them down. I don't expect it to be anything exciting to look at, but I think it'll be closer than certainly the bookies seem to think it will be. I agree, it'll be intriguing to watch. The other game from last week was Wales, in that it was just so poor, really. You know, they didn't really offer anything. We predicted that to an extent, but they've got Argentina today, and Argentina on the back of beating England, they'll really fancy themselves.
Yeah, to be fair, you called the Wales one right. I got it completely wrong. I thought New Zealand looked a little stale, but they actually looked rejuvenated and absolutely beat them at the gate. Today's a really big game for Wales. You know, they had a very poor Six Nations, losing to Italy at home. Took a lot of credit from their summer series with South Africa, but to get so badly beaten by New Zealand makes this one a must win for me. Like, you're at home. It's a toss-up game, though. Argentina are playing really, really well. You know, Emmanuel Boffelli is kicking his goals. He's probably one of the World Player of the Year nominees. A massive loss for them, though, is their hooker Montoya from Leicester. He's their captain. He's their talisman. He's one of the best hookers in the world. He picked up a late rib injury, so he's not featuring. I think Augustin Creevy has come into the team, an old warrior, but I think he'll be a big loss. I think Wales might just have enough. Like, for Argentina, it would be tough maybe to back up, you know, a massive scalp last week with another big win, but it would not surprise me in the slightest if Argentina went and won. They do seem to be in a really good place. And just to touch back on England, because I mentioned, you know, they play Argentina last week, they play Japan this week. Eddie Jones is obsessed with the World Cup. They're their two World Cup pool opponents. So Argentina struck a major psychological blow last week. So if Japan can do something similar, that pool could be shaping up very interestingly. We thought maybe England were the runaway favourites. It doesn't appear that way at the moment. So some psychological kind of shaping up ahead of the World Cup with a couple of these fixtures as well.
Well, I'll tell you this much, I'm all over Argentina for this one, Will, because I know, knowing Checa and Felipe Contepomi the way that I do, they'll see this as a massive opportunity. They've beaten England. Wales are a bit of a wounded animal at the moment, and they will be going out with every single thing they have to win this game, because if they come back off this tour having beaten two of the big names in World Rugby pre-World Cup at this stage, it's a massive achievement for them. So all of those players are going to be revved up to the nines. I would be astonished if they don't come out with one of the most, and I'm not sure that Wales, I feel there's weaknesses in the front row, weaknesses in that front five, a few ageing players. players. Even the back row, you look at like a Tipperidge last week and different players, they just look a bit battered and worn out. Whereas this Argentina meat, it is what I use to describe that pack. I think they'll bowl into this Welsh team and they'll put up a bit of a battle for a while, but I think they could capitulate at the end of it all. And I'm predicting an Argentina victory on this one, I have to say. I think it'll take everything in Wales to get a result.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. Like you mentioned, like that pack across the board, but even in that pack, like, you know, Pablo Matera has been unbelievable. He, you know, at the Crusaders, you know, getting that education down in New Zealand, it seems to have brought him on even more. You know, Marcus Kramer, Thomas Lavanini, these guys are all real quality. As I mentioned, Montoya is a big loss, but when he's there and he's fit and firing, like, that's a serious pack. Like, they have a lot of quality there, and I agree. The momentum is with them, and they play Scotland next weekend as well. So, like, they could potentially come out of this with, like, you know, a clean sweep of Northern Hemisphere victory.
That's the target.
After beating New Zealand in New Zealand, after putting up a record win against Australia. Excuse me, all of a sudden you're going into a World Cup where your pool is definitely manageable.
Yeah.
And you think we could go on a bit of a run here. And as you said, who better to have in there than Michael Checa and Felipe Contepomi? Like, what a coaching staff to get in at short notice ahead of a World Cup. So they've been one of the success stories of the year, as much as Ireland in some ways, considering where they were coming from.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, finally, we're going to have to discuss France, South Africa. I said it to you last week. I know you were all over France.
Yeah, you were right again.
I really just felt, and they were lucky. France were lucky last week. I just felt they'd be that little bit rusty, and that proved to be the case. Now South Africa they have to win this game. They like in their mind they've had a rough time of it, so that means we're in for an absolute cracker tonight at 8 o'clock. I'll go with France with you on this one. I do think they'll get the result in this game, but a cracking game ahead of us.
It's funny, I'm actually going to zag again. I actually think South Africa, with their backs against the wall, they made a couple of changes to that team. The game has been taken out of the Stade de France. It's been brought to Marseille. That kind of adds a little bit of an unknown for this fixture. You look at the two team sheets, it's stocked full of quality. The big question mark again for South Africa is that at half, they persisted with Damian Willemse. They brought Manny Lebok onto the bench, who, if people have been watching the URC for the Stormers, he kicks his goals very well. Like, that's what you need in that. Like, if they had a goal kicker last weekend, they probably would have won, but they have brought in Faf de Klerk and Willie LaRue, two really kind of controlling players. And when Willie LaRue came in, a first receiver last week, he looked very, very good. So there won't be maybe as much pressure on Damian Willemse in open play to be the fulcrum. But the kicking game is just, for South Africa to kind of abandon that element of the game, which they usually base their, you know, their victories on, I just think is mad. And that could be what trips them up. If Willemse on the tee can maybe have a bit of more consistency, I think they might sneak it. Like, for it's going to be very close. And again, like, to see these two power-filled packs go at it will be an absolute, you know, it'll be a physical battle, but there's still so much quality behind the scrum. I think South Africa might nick it, but I've been so wrong with everyone bar Ireland that I don't hold me to it.
Okay, it's time to talk GAA now. Let's talk to Declan Drake.
Thank you, Reg. Yeah, last weekend was certainly an historic one for Kilmacud Crokes ladies. The first time Dublin champions at their first attempt secured Leinster Senior Club Championship glory with a resounding 4-15-8 final success over Wicklow Queens Tinahely out in Bray. A standout performer for the Purple and Gold was Aoife Rutledge, who helped herself to a fantastic personal tally of 3-1 all from play. And how wonderful it is to see her back in full flow on the football fields again after her recent injury troubles. Crokes now go on to meet the Ulster champions in a fortnight's time. They, at this moment in time, are not known. To the Crokes men now, the back-to-back Dublin champions for the second consecutive year have disposed of the challenge of Naas in the Leinster Club Football Championship. Last year, it was at the final stage. This time, it was at the last eight in Parnell Park. Robbie Brennan's crew winning out 3-14-14 to set up a Croke Park semi-final date with Laois champions Port Arlington a week tonight at GAA headquarters with a 7 o'clock start. Indeed, if Crokes are to retain the Leinster title this year, they won't have to leave the capital to do it, because the Leinster final will also be played in Croke Park, that on the first weekend in December. Switching now to hurling and Crokes, the county champions. Well, they open their Leinster Senior Championship campaign tomorrow afternoon when they welcome Laois champions Cluck Ballacolla to Parnell Park for a game that has a 2:30 start. Remember, last year, Crokes, having won the county title, were shocked by the Laishmen at O'Moore Park in Port Laois. So the Purple and Gold will be more than determined to turn the tables this particular weekend. Well, after the recent county final victory over Nafina at Parnell Park, I spoke to joint manager Kieran Dowling and began by putting it to him that his team had proven a good team wins a county title, but a great team retains it.
And that's exactly what we said on Thursday night, Declan, that's what this is about, is trying to build on the work that's been done at underage and make sure that we can keep going and keep winning. But you're right, when we came out in 2012 and 2014, in the following years, we never got beyond a quarter final. So it was important to us when we set targets for the year to get back here and go again and get back into a final. So we did that. We won today on back of all the hard work the lads did, and it wasn't easy. We've had a lot of injuries and a lot of retirements. I see Dylan Mulligan there with Damien Kelly, two lads that, you know, packed it in. So to get us back here has been some achievement, and it's just brilliant.
It's a squad effort, 25, 26 players, plus the guys who are pushing these guys but don't make the final match day squad. But one man stood out today, that was Oisin O'Rourke.
Oisin has been immense all year. We brought him out the field for about a year and a half ago to give him more space. Oisin was on a minor team that I would have had about 2010 and 11, and his pace, his movement, you know, his touch is just outstanding. So to get him out there where he can dominate games, it's just been brilliant. So it has.
Now it's back-to-back county titles, as you say, and you're into the Leinster Club Championship. You're going to be playing Cluck Ballacolla again, the team that beat you last year. It's here though in 3 weeks' time.
Later in the week, and then start preparing. We need to get a couple of the videos out and try and work out where do we go from here. Declan Laffin is an outstanding manager and coach and tactician. So much so, he's in with Tipperary for next year. So we need to learn and adapt our game for the heavier pitch and the heavier days. But look, I got through today. I'm delighted. That was just brilliant. And to win again was just fantastic.
I'll just ask you one more question. The experience and the craft of your team, how crucial were those ingredients in that victory today, Kieran?
I think it was huge, but it's also down to the relentlessness. Des Earls is our strength and conditioning coach and has just got them working hard all year. And if you go back through the videos of our matches, we will never stop. We will just keep going. And that's a cultural change that we've brought in over the last couple of years, is you go. If it goes to 90 minutes, we'll go 90 minutes. We take you on and just give us your best and we'll just keep fighting. And if you're a better team, so be it.
We say on the programme this morning too, congratulations to hurlers of Whitehall Cullum Kill, who last Saturday at the second attempt captured the go-ahead Dublin 2 Senior Championship title with a replay victory over Fogs at Parnell Park. Finally today, two big games taking place in the ladies' sphere. St Vincent's, our senior Camogie Queens, opened their Leinster Championship campaign at the semi-final stage. They have home advantage this afternoon from 1:30 against Thomastown of Kilkenny at Parknave Inchin. And meanwhile, O'Dwyer's ladies junior football team, well, they contest the Leinster final today against Muckalee of Kilkenny. That one taking place out in Baltinglass in Wicklow and gets underway at 1 o'clock. And we here on Dublin's Talking Sport take this opportunity of wishing all our county representatives every success in their endeavours this weekend.
Football, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, a great weekend of rugby ahead of us this weekend, and indeed football tomorrow. We look at the FAI Cup final, Derry City taking on Shelburne. Last year's occasion was absolutely incredible. Colour, flares, lots of chat, and a decent game as well on top of that. And I think tomorrow will be even bigger. It looks like there's great ticket sales on it, so one to really look forward to.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping for anyway, Reggie. As you say, the ticket sales seem to be going very well at the moment, and it's our showpiece day, as you know. I think you were at the final last year as well, so I'm not sure if you're heading along tomorrow, but it promises to be a great occasion. And two good teams, and I suppose there's lots of storylines and plot lines, especially with the fact that Damien Duff is in the final. He's a box office name on his own after the career that he's had, but the fact that he's managing in our league now, I think it just adds so much to it. And Rory Higgins himself, his first full season with Derry City, for them to finish second in the league and now get to a cup final as well, he's had an absolutely brilliant year. And I think Derry are only going from strength to strength as well when you think of the investment in the squad and the fact that they push Shamrock Rovers this year. I think they'll push them again next year and they'll get stronger whether they win the cup or not. So I think it promises to be a great occasion, and then you add in the players as well. Lots of talent on show, young talent as well. Shelburne have a young side, some young players in the Derry team as well. So I'm really looking forward to it, Reggie, and hopefully it's a great day.
Yeah, I will be going along to it. I'll be bringing my lads to it. Like you said, last year they loved it. Not going to miss it this year either. But where, obviously, Derry come into this game as favourites, maybe slight favourites in some people's minds, but in others they're strong favourites. They have a good squad of players, as you said, the Damien Duff connection, the emotion all around it. What's your feeling on it? Are you leaning towards Derry, or where do you think the game, how do you see this one go?
Yeah, I think it's tight to call, Reggie, even though if you look at the league table, obviously there's a big gap in terms of points. Derry finished second and Shelburne were seventh in the table, but it was Shelburne's first season and Damien Duff, obviously, his first year as manager, and there was a huge turnover of players at the start of the season. I think he brought in 14 new players, so it took him time to get moving and to get time to gel. I think as the season has gone on, they've gotten stronger and gotten better, as you'd expect. The more they've played with each other and the relationships that they've built up amongst each other on the pitch. So I think they finished the season quite strong and they'll only get better as well now that they're back established in the Premier Division. Derry, on the other hand, brought in a lot of marquee signings, marquee players, the likes of Patrick McElhenney, Michael Duffy, but they were missing for large parts at the early part of the season as well. But you look at their form towards the end, it's been very, very good. And bar the last couple of games, they went on a run there where they were unbeaten in, I think, 15 games, 16 games. And with Shamrock Rovers' distractions in Europe, they really pushed them towards the end. So I think they are the favourites slightly, but you look at the four games that they've played so far, Derry have won two, Shelburne won one, and Shelburne drew. There was a draw in the other match. And even in the three victories in the matches, it was only a goal that separated each match. So they've all been very tight, cagey affairs. I think tomorrow will be tight as well. I think it might be a little bit more open, but I definitely think it'll be tight. And Shelburne set up with a formation where it's almost kind of five at the back at times and two sitting in front, and they're very kind of well organised, well disciplined, and I think it's going to be up to Derry to break them down. They like to play and like to create. They're the ones that have the lion's share of possession, so it's up to them kind of come up with the solutions to try and break them down. But Shelburne on the counter-attack are very dangerous as well, Reggie, and they'll be looking to exploit Derry if they leave gaps at the back, and especially with Sean Boyd up front, who's had a great season, and he's a big handful of a centre forward for any team. So I think that's how it's going to play out. Derry, as I say, will have the lion's share of possession, and Shelburne will look to soak up a lot of that and hit them on the break. But it is tough to call. I've been thinking about it all week, Reggie, and it's tough to call, but Derry are the slight favourite.
Damien Duff, being who he is, obviously has garnered a lot of the attention this week in the build-up to it, but mention has to be given to Rory O'Connor as well, coming in, good Derry City manager, a lot of pressure on him, because I know certainly pre-season there was all the chat about how much money they were going to have and he'd be able to buy the world of players and all the rest of it, but he's kind of just kept himself under the radar a little bit, maybe not as much centre of attention as maybe Damien will be getting in this one, but he's been very successful too.
Yeah, absolutely, Reggie. It's a good point to make, because all the focus is, of course, on Damien, and because of the profile that he has and the status that he has in the game here and the fact that he's now managing our league, of course, all the focus on him. And he's achieved a lot in getting to them to the cup final in his first season. But Rory Higgins has achieved unbelievable things, because there was a lot of pressure on him at the start of the year, as you said. Everybody was speaking about the investment. But they haven't gone mad either, Reggie, to be fair. They've been quite prudent. And the chairman has said that he's not going to go mad, even though there's money there and there's money in the kitty. He's not just going to throw money at it. They've kind of built and they brought players in that suit the style and suit the structure of the team. And they've brought in very good players. There's no getting away from that. But they've also brought in players who were available to other clubs as well. The likes of Brandon Kavanagh, Brian Maher, Cameron Dumigan, even though Duffy and McElhenney, they're the marquee names. They've brought in players that were still available for others to get. So they've gone about it with a bit of common sense as well, I think, and that's the right way to go about it. They've built up a very strong squad, a very good team. As I mentioned, they finished second, the Shamrock Rovers are only going to get stronger. Whether they win tomorrow or not, they're still going to strengthen in the off season because they've big plans up there in Derry City. And to be fair to Rory Higgins, a young manager in his first full season, he's done very, very well.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, the best of luck to Rory Higgins and Damien Duff, of course, and their sides in that game. It'll be a cracker, and as I said, I'm looking forward to that one. Across the water now, still plenty going on. We're hanging on over there, Arsenal. Yeah. We've got Wolves away, which is going to be a tough one, but we're putting in the results, just keeping going.
I think you're doing better than hanging on. I mentioned a few weeks ago that I felt this was... He's built up a group of players now in a squad that are the real deal, because they were the questions that were being thrown at Arteta, I suppose, in the first 6 or 7 weeks when they got off to such a brilliant start. But I felt because of the work that he had done in the off-season, and as I mentioned, that little bit of insight we got into the documentary and how he operates, how he works as well, I think he's gone about it absolutely brilliant, and the results certainly reflect that. Whether they're going to win the league, I think that's a whole different question. But to be fair to him, if they win today, and they go in today, great, obviously with the World Cup coming up on top of the league, I think it'll be a hell of an achievement for him. And it'll be a good time then to maybe reset and reassess, depending on how the players come back from the World Cup, and go again in the new after Christmas. So I think he's done an absolutely brilliant job, and I think they will win today as well, Reggie. Obviously, Wolves have come up with a new manager, Lopetegui, but he's not taken over until after the World Cup. So I think Arsenal will win today and they'll finish top going into the World Cup break.
Yeah, no, well, I hope you're right. The other one I'm interested in this weekend is Newcastle. Again, another one that are kind of just keeping it going nice and steady. And they've got Chelsea this week. Chelsea now, after we beat them last week, will have to try and bounce back from that. But going to Newcastle to try and get a win, that's not going to be an easy one.
No, tough game. Newcastle will be absolutely brilliant. On top, I suppose, of the brilliant job Arteta has done, you'd nearly argue Eddie Howe is second in line to Arteta, because everybody speaks about the money as well, and we know the regime, and we're not happy about that in terms of what's happening at Newcastle. But I don't think you could just label it as pure money as the reason why they're up there, because I think there's 8 or 9 players that were there before the takeover that are playing in the team every week. The likes of Willock, Dan Byrne, Jacob Murphy, these lads that, again, any team in the league could have had. But the coaching job that he's done, Eddie Howe, to turn around Joe Linton, Almiron, who's been absolutely revelation. So he has, I think he's done an unbelievable job, Eddie Howe. And that is a tough game for Chelsea. And for the first time now since Potter has taken over, I think he's probably feeling the heat a little bit. He hasn't had a win now in the last 4 games. And I know it's going to take him time as well, and hopefully to give him the time, because I think it's a great appointment and he's a great manager. But probably for the first time, he is feeling the heat. And today is a big game for them. And you'd have to fancy Newcastle with the form that they're in.
You would indeed. The other team then that are kind of confusing me a little bit, they're sitting in fourth place, Spurs, on 26 points, but they've lost to United, they've lost to Newcastle, they've lost to Liverpool. I'm wondering how they're sitting in fourth place. And they've got Leeds, who are trying their best and battling hard to get a little bit further away. They're sitting in 12th, but they're not exactly, you know, they're only 2 points away from that relegation zone at the moment, 2 or 3 points. So, you know, I can't work Spurs out at the moment.
No, it's very difficult. And if you listen to Spurs fans, you'd swear they were 18th in the table, Reggie. You know, there's serious doom and gloom around at the moment. And I think with Conte and the style of football, and he's coming out battling against that, given reasons as to why they're playing, he's saying with the amount of games, stuff like that. And but they're fourth. And I think if you were to look at it at the start of the year, if they were to finish at the Champions League places, he has them into the latter stages of the Champions League as well, or through to the next round. So I think they've done well. It's just in the last few weeks, obviously because of results, as you said, and maybe performance is more so than results in a couple of those games, especially the one against United, they were absolutely desperate. But if they win today, I think that'll kind of just quieten things down, go into the break, and something like what I was saying with Arsenal, that reset again and have a right go and in January and see if they can get into the Champions League places. But I'd still be holding on to Conte. I know there's a bit of discontent at the moment, but I think he's a brilliant manager, and again, he needs time, Reggie. I know there was a lot of players brought in the summer, but I think if he was in those positions in the Champions League, that Levy might give him more money to bring in another one or two, because he maintains he needs 2 or 3 transfer windows, and he probably does.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken, and Reggie. Have a good weekend.